I called the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
Hold on, ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Air Force. There's no one.
Yo. And welcome back to The Fix, the realest and blackest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. I am your host, Joseph Ward, straight from the South, giving you the sports the way it's supposed to be given to you, because I got tired of listening to these white guys trying to talk about sports, especially the black athletes, more particularly from the sports, the black athletes, in the manner that they're talking about them, trying to understand black people, but then little white minds. So I decided to do my show, The Fix, where it's real, and we talk about it the way it needs to be talked about, in a way that's going to benefit us and our community. Yes, football and basketball and all these other sports can be an escape, but when you're behind enemy lines, you got to use whatever you can to make sure you prosper and move forward in this world. All right, now that we got that out the way, remember, The Fix is brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants. And On the Shoulders of Giants brings African history directly to your fingertips through their African history book series, blog series, YouTube channel, African history curriculum app, nonprofit organization, as well as educational classes, seminars, lectures, keynote speaking sessions, and whatever you in whatever manner you would need On the Shoulders of Giants to deliver African history. And it's in an entertaining manner. So for more information, make sure you visit www.ontheshouldersone.com to get to the On the Shoulders of Giants blog, and www.ontheshouldersone.org to learn more about the On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization. All right, let's go ahead and jump right into it today. You know what I'm saying? We got a lot to get to. So, first thing first, starting out in our HBCU spotlight. And once again, the University of North Carolina A&T will get the spotlight from the Fix Sports Podcast because it has did something that's spotlight worthy. They have secured the outright near title with their undefeated season going 11-0 with a victory over North Carolina Central University, right? And so they needed to defeat North Carolina Central because basically that's their nemesis. And for the last 3 years, from my understanding, North Carolina Central have spoiled their plans to either go to the playoffs, go to a special bowl game, or even win the MEAC. But this year was a little different. North Carolina A&T, they said, nah, we ain't going out like that this year. So they went on ahead and went 10 toes down and defeated North Carolina Central University 24-10 at Aggie Stadium. And they felt good about the team. The students stormed the field after the victory, right? Because they were happy that they completed the undefeated season. So they're undefeated outright, undefeated in the MEAC. MEAC champs, and they are going to the Celebration Bowl. I wish they would be going to the playoffs, but they are going to the Celebration Bowl, and this is the first time that they have captured the outright MEAC title in 14 years. And so, 11-0. I mean, 11-0 is special. Not too many teams go undefeated on the whole season. So, shout out to North Carolina A&T for going 11-0 So this is commentary by the coach Broadway. He says, first of all, being 11 and 0 is special. It was a good win and a good competitive football game. It was a very physical football game. I thought it to be a dumb football game at times, especially that one drive in the fourth quarter. It was so unlike us to commit that many penalties. That's not how we play around here, and that's not how we're going to play. But the guys fought, and I thought they showed a lot of class with the way they fought. So it was a good game, close game, hard-fought game. But in the end, the Aggies came out with the victory, 24-10 over North Carolina Central University to secure their undefeated season, secure their spot in the Celebration Bowl. I'm not sure just right now who they will be playing in the Celebration Bowl. But they are going to defend their undefeated season so they can end the season 12-0 and, have a lot to brag about. So, as always, we like to give our studio audience give a little round of applause for our recipient of our HBCU Spotlight. So, one time for the Aggies of North Carolina A&T. For going 11-0, 8-0 in the MEAC, and securing that spot in the Celebration Bowl. So that's our HBCU Spotlight. So now I want to get y'all with some HBCU news. So scrolling through social media the other day, come to find out that Hampton University putting on their big boy pants, and they are deciding that they will be one of the few Black college football teams who will not be playing in a predominantly or all black college football conference. So Hampton University is joining the Big South Conference, which will become effective July 1st of 2018, after 22 years in the MEAC or the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference. The announcement was made at 11 a.m. on November 16th. On November 16th at 11 a.m., in a joint Hampton University Big South press conference at the Hampton University Student Center Theater. The move to the Big South Conference is just another part of an exciting year at Hampton University, and that comes from the president, Dr. William R. Harvey of Hampton University. Institutions in the Big South are located in Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina, which means that our student athletes will spend less time traveling and more time in classes on campus. This keeps the proper focus on academics, which is our chief reason for being. The smaller geographic footprint will also reduce travel expenses. Another important consideration is the large number of alumni located in the Big South region. We have enjoyed our 22-year relationship with the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference and hope to continue competing with some of its teams. Now, we know that got a little bit to do with money, so let's not act like it's all on academic and traveling. If they win it, they're going to make a lot more money, so let's go ahead and say that, right? Big South Commissioner Kyle Calander couldn't be more excited for the conference and for Hampton University. This is a big day for the Big South. We are so pleased that Hampton University is joining the Big South family, Calander said. We have always been impressed by Hampton's academics and athletics accomplishments under President Harvey's visionary leadership. We appreciate his interest and support in the Big South and look forward to working with him and the rest of Hampton's leadership. To support our student athletes. The Big South is a better conference with Hampton athletically, academically, and providing outstanding opportunities for our student athletes. Now, so Hampton is joining the Big South effective July 1st, 2018. I wish Hampton the best. I don't think that that's a bad move. A lot of people think that that's a bad move or a sellout move. I don't think it's a bad or a sellout move. I do think that black college football can be better, needs to be better. It can be branded better. It can be have better facilities. It's not Chitlin Circuit. Black college football shouldn't be looked at as Chitlin Circuit football. So Hampton going to the Big South could be a good thing, or Hampton going to the Big South could mean the fall of these conferences that house these black college football teams. It could go either way. Now, if Hampton does good, Well, really, I mean, if you think about it, if Hampton does good, that could lead to other teams leaving these conferences, and that could be a problem. So conferences like the SWAC, MEAC, the CIAA, and the other black, predominantly black college conferences need to improve all around. They can be better. Hampton leaving is what it is. They're gone. They leaving. They gone. Right? They gone. They ain't coming back. So I hope they're successful, but I hope this is not the beginning of the end of black college football conferences, and black college teams won't start to migrate to these predominantly white conferences. We know money is involved. We know money is involved. So let's not act like money is not involved. Money is definitely involved in what's going on with the move, because it's a potential to make a whole lot more money when you're playing college football on. And basically, they're going from, if we put it in old school football terms, they're going from Division II to Division I, right? So they're playing better teams, better brand, better style of football. From my understanding, they already have the facilities, and Hampton has money. So that's a move that Hampton can make. Hopefully, other teams can follow in their footsteps as far as having top-notch facilities for HBCUs. Once again, HBCU football isn't, and it shouldn't be looked at as chitlin circuit football. HBCU football has the potential, and it still does, to this day, have the potential and have the means to acquire top-notch talent. Now, it's not in abundance as these top schools, but it can get back to that with the improvement of the facilities and actually winning and support money being poured into these schools. So us as black people, we can do a better job of supporting these schools, but you know, they're going to the Big South. We're gonna see what happens. We're going to see what happens, see the fallout. Like I said, it could go either way. I'm being optimistic in saying, and I'm going to say good luck to Hampton, and I wish them well. But I hope it's not the beginning of the end of the conferences, the black conferences, because, you know, we've seen this happen in the past where teams, individuals, start to leave these conferences, at least, that are controlled by black people, and that's usually the beginning of the end. We don't want to see that happen, but we're not going to sit here and act like that things like that haven't happened in the past, and we're not going to just excuse me, be ready to be blindsided by things. So always looking at it in more than one way, not just looking at it as, okay, well, Hampton going, but, you know, it could go either way. It could be good, it could be bad. It could cause these schools and these conferences to get better. More money could be poured in, which means more people are supporting these schools. And when the money gets to these schools, the money is handled properly. That needs to happen. Facilities definitely need to be improved around these conferences. The MEAC, the SWAC, all these other black college conferences, the top conferences. I mean, the football is good. The football is good. The entertainment is good. The atmosphere is good. But things can be improved. So that's one part of our HBCU news, that Hampton is leaving the MEAC, and they're gone July 1st, 2018. We join the Big South Conference. So, all right, so second part of our HBCU news is the announcement of the MEAC Hall of Fame Class of 2018. So the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference, or the MEAC, announced today that 5 members of its Hall of Fame class, the inductees, will be enshrined during an awards brunch on Thursday, March 8, 2018, starting with a welcome gathering at 9:30 a.m. at the Sheraton Norfolk West Waterside Hotel in Norfolk, Virginia. The Hall of Fame class will also be recognized before the 6 p.m. men's basketball game during the 2018 MEAC basketball tournament on March 8th at the Norfolk Scope Arena. I would like to congratulate the 2018 Hall of Fame class for all of the accomplishments, both athletically and professionally, and that's by Dr. Dennis E. Thomas, the commissioner of the MEAC. The honorees have made significant contributions to their families, communities, institutions, and this conference. They are to be commended. Once again, that's by Dr. Dennis E. Thomas, commissioner of the MEAC. The MEAC Hall of Fame highlights former student athletes, coaches, university and conference administrators, as well as special contributors who have enriched the legacy of the conference since its inception in 1970. Enshrinees, a 13-person committee made up of administrators and representatives from member institutions. The inaugural Hall of Fame class was inducted on May 29th, 1981, during the 10-year anniversary banquet in Greensboro, North Carolina. Since its establishment, the Mint Hall of Fame has enshrined 143 people, including the class of 2018. So congratulations to the class of 2018, which is Nick Collins of Bethune-Cookman College, Catherine Darby of South Carolina State University, Charlene Johnson of South Carolina State University, Jania Lee of Morgan State University, Jay Walker of Howard University. So we would like to give a round of applause to all the enshrinees into the 2018 MEAC Hall of Fame. Yes, yes, yes. Stop. Yes, yes, yes. MEAC enshrinees. Give them a round of applause. Applause for stuff. So, yes, all right, finally stop. All right. So, give you a little bit of information. So, Nick Collins was a 3-year starter at free safety and a captain of one of the most successful teams in Bethune-Cookman history. Known as a ferocious hitter, the free safety earned an All-American first team All-MEAC honors when he led the league with 6 interceptions in 2004. He was inducted into the Bethune-Cookman Athletic Hall of Fame in 2016. He was picked in the second round of the NFL draft by the Green Bay Packers in 2005, going on to earn 3 Pro Bowl appearances and scoring a touchdown in the Packers Super Bowl victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers. After retiring in 2015, Collins was named to the Green Bay Packers Hall of Fame in 2016. He is the son of former Wildcats quarterback Willie Collins, a consensus choice of the coaches of his era as one of the greatest athletes to ever lead a Bethune-Cookman football team. Catherine Chuck Darby is hailed as one of the best defensive players in South Carolina State football history. A 4-year starter from 1994 to 97, he was named first-team All-MEAC 96 and 97. Darby was also named All-American in 1997 by the Sporting News and the Sheridan Broadcasting Network. He set school and MEAC records for career sacks with 40.5, and his 22 sacks in 1997 are also a school record. I remember him. During Darby's playing days, the Bulldogs went a combined 29-15, including a 10-2 mark in 94. When South Carolina State defeated Grambling State in the Heritage Bowl and were named Black College National Champions. He was the Heritage Bowl Defensive Player of the Game after recording 5 sacks in that contest, and Darby was also inducted into the South Carolina State Athletic Hall of Fame in 2006. In 2007, he was named to the Bulldog Centennial football team. Darby signed as a free agent with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 2001, spending 4 seasons with the team, winning the Super Bowl. And he had an 11-year football career. Darby also played for the Seahawks and the Detroit Lions. Charlene Johnson played basketball for South Carolina State University, helping the Lady Bulldogs win the 1979 AIAW National Championship. But after graduating, she gave over 3 decades of service to the university as an administrator. In addition to serving as an assistant coach with the women's basketball program, Johnson was also coach of the volleyball and women's tennis programs, becoming the first woman to serve as a full-time head coach at South Carolina State. She was the 1986 MEAC Coach of the Year in tennis, and she was named the conference's Coach of the Year in volleyball in 1990 after leading the Lady Bulldogs in the first MEAC championship. Johnson also served the university as athletic director and senior woman administrator. She was twice served as interim director of athletics before being named to the position on a permanent basis in 2004. She served as athletic director at her alma mater for 11 years, the first woman to serve in that capacity at the school, and the first woman to serve as a chairperson of the MEAC Directors of Athletics. In 1998 inductee into the South Carolina State Athletic Hall of Fame, Johnson served on both the NCAA Division I Football Championship Committee and the Women's Volleyball Championship Committee. All right, now, Jania Lee from Morgan State. She's one of the most dominant middle hitters in MEAC history, and she helped Morgan State. She helped the Morgan State volleyball program create a championship pedigree in the conference. After being named MEAC Rookie of the Year and second team All MEAC in 1994, she was a first team All MEAC selection as a sophomore the following season, leading the Lady Bears to a MEAC title and leading the conference in blocks. She was the most outstanding performer in the 1995 MEAC championship, and she helped lead Morgan State to the second MEAC title in 1998, earning first-team All-MEAC and All-Tournament Team honors. Lee's team became the first HBCU to earn a spot in NCAA Division I tournament, and she finished her career with a school record of 512 blocks, a school record 253 serve aces, and 921 digs. In the spring, the Bedford Hills New York native played softball at Morgan State as a pitcher and catcher. Jay Walker is one of the most prolific football names in Howard history. After transferring to the Bison from Long Beach State, Walker was a two-time first-team All-MEAC selection and the conference's Offensive Player of the Year in 1993. That season, the Bison went undefeated en route to win the MEAC and Black College National Championships. He passed for 3,324 yards in 1993, which ranks as the second highest singles total in MEAC history, and his 223 completions that season ranked fifth in conference history. He also threw 24 touchdown passes in 1993, tying the sixth highest single season total in MEAC history. In 2005, Walker was inducted into the Howard University Athletic Hall of Fame, a seventh-round draft pick by the New England Patriots. Walker played in the NFL for four seasons, two for the Patriots and two for the Minnesota Vikings. He has served on the Maryland House of Delegates since 2007 and currently works as college football analyst for ESPN. And I watch him when I watch Black college football. So once again, one time for Jay Walker, Janiyah Lee, Charlene Johnson, Catherine Darby, and Nick Collins for being inducted, for being the 2018 MEAC Hall of Fame inductees. One time for them. So now I want to talk about something that I think is pretty damn cool. I can't remember what the hell I was doing. I'm trying to remember what I was doing. I can't remember what the hell I was doing. But I came across a story, and I'm finna sing this song. It's kind of relevant, but it don't really go. And I don't really know all the words, but I know y'all just really can't believe Nigeria has a bobsled team. And even though this go from Cool Runnings about the Jamaican bobsled team, it don't matter because just Nigeria got a bobsled team and it's going real cool. I know my song, you might not like it, but I don't care, but I'm about to spike it. Oh yeah, baby, you know you can believe Nigeria, they have a bobsled team. And I know I could do another song, but it don't matter, but this song is on like the Cool Runnings, but this ain't Cool Runnings, because this is Nigeria. And these women are getting down, and you know it's causing hysteria. One time for the Nigerian bobsled team. Yeah, one time. So, as you can see by my whack-ass song I just sung, but it don't even matter. I sung it anyway. Nigeria has a bobsled team that is headed to the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang in 2018. 30 years after the Jamaican bobsled team captured hearts around the world, three women from Nigeria stand on the brink of making history of their own in the same event. Driver Segun Igu. I'm finna mess up their name. I'm just letting y'all know now. I'm finna mess up their name. So the driver of the it's three women. The driver is Seyun Adigun. The break women are Ekuma Omioga and Ngozi Onwu Merritt. Ekuma, Seyun, and Ngozi have qualified for Pyeongchang 2018, ensuring that an African nation will be represented in the Winter Olympics 2018 in Pyeongchang. One time, raise the roof. Raise the roof, Seyun, Ekuma, and Ngozi. Sejun, Akuma, and them Goz. It's going down, man. Hey, y'all got to love that, though, because ain't no snow nowhere in Nigeria. Ain't no snow nowhere in Nigeria, but these women defied the odds, did what they need to do, and qualified for 2018 Winter Olympics. You know what I'm saying, man? That's live. Y'all got to, you got to understand, but the determination, the grit, the mind, everything that they put into ensuring that they will be in the Olympics. A far-fetched idea for some, but not for women like these. These women should be applauded and admired for this feat. I mean, in athletics, especially when we come to teaching our young women about self-esteem and self-determination and believing in yourself and trusting yourself, right? If these three women trusted themselves, they trusted themselves, and I'm sure they had naysayers. I'm sure they had people telling them that it's crazy that, first of all, you ain't no Jamaican bobsled team. This ain't cool runnings and all these things, because it's years after all these things came out, and ain't no snow nowhere in Nigeria nowhere. But despite the naysayers they might have had, and despite the challenges they might have had and setbacks and all of the hardships, they overcame all of that to qualify for the 2018 Olympics in Pyeongchang. And you got to love them for that. You got to give them their props for that. And you know dang on well all black people in the world going to be behind y'all, ladies. Ladies, Sejun, Akuma, and Gozi, all black people in the world, we're going to be behind y'all, watching y'all. We got y'all back. Let somebody say something wrong about y'all, we going to let them have it. We snapping on them. I'm telling you. Let somebody say wrong with y'all. Hey, they kind of fine, too. I ain't going to lie. They're kind of fine, too. But not to be sexist. Not to be sexist. They're nice-looking young women. Nice-looking young women. It's a nice, it's a cool little video of them Millie rocking, too. They like, they celebrate, I'm Millie rocking Nigerian blocks. They Millie rocking. So they're going to be Millie rocking from their blocks in Nigeria to Pyeongchang. And I pray that they come home with the gold. Three beautiful, successful women representing Nigeria. So here a little more details. So after completing all they had five qualifying races. They completed that. Nigerian women's bobsled team are on their way to South Korea in February. Ecstatic to say the least, posted the Bobsled and Skeleton Sports Federation of Nigeria. To see a mere dream come to reality is a true blessing, is what they're saying. The hard work was inspiring. I hope Nigerians can appreciate what it took for them to achieve this. And that's by the BSFN president, Solomon Ogoba. I'm messing up. They are all very successful people in their own rights, in sports and out of it, and somehow they are still motivated and still push for more success. I've watched them train and work hard to represent Nigeria at the Winter Olympics in a very technical and high-risk sport, and they have achieved that. Away from the ice, all three have been professional track and field athletes for their time. Adegun, who once dreamed of becoming the first woman in the NBA, enjoyed particular success in the 100-meter hurdles, winning the national championships on multiple occasions and representing Nigeria in the 2012 London Olympic Games. Okay. Now they will go where no Nigerians have ever gone before. We are from a continent that would never imagine sliding down ice for 80 or 90 miles per hour, Adegun told the BBC in March. I find the idea of getting people to take that inspiring myself. They understand their place. They understand what they've done. They understand what they're doing. So they've taken what they've learned in the past, the successes they've had in the past, the faith that they've had in the past, and they rolled it all up and they're really rocking it on now, making it happen. I mean, you got to see the video. It's pretty cool. It's very inspiring. Black women are the lives. Black women are y'all so live. Oh, y'all so live. Black women, y'all so live. That's straight up. That's nice to hear. You know I had to talk about it on the Fix, man. You know I had to put that spotlight on the women right here on this Fix, man. We the realest in the Blackest Sports Podcast. If ain't nobody else talking about it, Joseph Ward talk about it. Tell you that. If ain't nobody else talking about it, who talking about it? Joseph Ward talk about it. We're talking about here, right here on this fix, though. You hear me? You hear me? So, one time for the ladies, and like I say, all black people got y'all, and we pray y'all bring home the gold, and we're going to be rocking with y'all. Yeah. I'm merely rocking on any block. I'm merely rocking on any block. Hey, man, I just think that kind of cool. All right, so, moving on. Something that got white people real mad. So, Colin Kaepernick has been named the Citizen of the Year by GQ Magazine, and white people have lost their minds. I can't believe they gone and put that disrespectful son on the cover of that G's and Q's magazines, and ain't put no good American white man on the cover of that G's and Q's. Well, I don't even know what a G's and Q's is, other than some stupid alphabets, and they've gone put that Negro on the cover of this G's and Q's magazines with his Negro hair and his Negro turtleneck and his Negro jacket, wearing all black, looking all Negroish, with his skin all Negroish and his Negro features and that Negro chain around his neck, Mr. Colin Kaepernick, Mr. Colin Kaepernick. You don't deserve the cover of a good white man's magazine, sir. You're not a true American citizen, Mr. Colin Kaepernick. I'm mad that you're on the cover of this white man's cover. And why this white man, he must be a nigga lover. He must be a nigga lover to put Colin Kaepernick on the cover of this G's and Q's magazine. Shut up, white boys. All y'all white people who mad, get over it. Get over it. Much has changed in the 4 years since Colin Kaepernick was last on the cover of GQ. Back then, he was a rippling superhero of a quarterback on the rise. But a simple act, kneeling during the national anthem, changed everything. It cost him his job, but also transformed Colin Kaepernick into a lightning rod and a powerful symbol of activism and resistance. And this is commentary from, I'm guessing from an article that GQ has written from. I'm on the GQ website. Though Colin Kaepernick continues his silent protest, he agreed to collaborate with the GQ on the special project for their December Men of the Year issue in an effort to, as the piece explains, reclaim the narrative of his protest. He helped us assemble a 10-person team of his closest confidants, including rapper J. Cole, director Ava DuVernay, activist Harry Belafonte, and Women's March co-founder Linda Sarsour. Yeah, I messed up on that. To speak on the subject of activism, protest, and equality, and to offer some of the rare insights into Colin Kaepernick himself. Paired with the piece are inspiring images by Martin Shuler, who photographed Colin Kaepernick in Harlem, intending to evoke the spirit of Muhammad Ali's anti-Vietnam War protests in the neighborhoods during the late 1960s. Now, hey man, it's one time for Cap getting the cover of GQ. I mean, I will say this, Cap don't need to be validated by white folk. I'm going to just say that. What Cap has done has already been accepted by black people, validated by black people. So the GQ cover ain't nothing helping or no validation to Cap, because Cap has already been validated by us. No. Yeah, we have dissected the protest and everything, but Cap, trust me, what you did, we appreciate what you did. Yes, we dissected and we think about it because we analytical and we want to make sure we get you the best, but we do appreciate that you were brave enough to take that stand. Now, it's our job as black people to make sure we do our job and take a stand and make sure that we support you and those like you who choose to take stances. And if we don't, then we can't get mad that our athletes and entertainers don't take stands. But remember, like I've always said, it's not our athletes, our entertainers' job to take stands. It's our job as regular people to take stands. I think it's their responsibility. It's, if you have the money to finance it, support it. Support it the best you can, but it's our job to be activists. It's our job to be activists. One time for Cap, though. And I'm glad that white people mad that he on the cover of GQ magazine as Citizen of the Year. I'm glad y'all racist white supremacists are mad. Kiss some ass. Get mad. Keep getting mad. Keep getting mad. Because you're just showing how messed up you are. You're just showing how retarded you are. You're just showing how vile you are. How pugnacious you are. I can go off there. How repugnant you are. Y'all smell like doo-doo. You mad because the man did something good. Well, it is what it is. They are mad that he took a stand against white supremacy, and he's actually getting praised for it. They're saying this nigga should get praised for taking a stand against white supremacy, but we are saying this black man will get his credit for what he's done. He will get his credit for what he's done. That's our job to make sure that we do our part. I'm going to keep saying that. It's our job to make sure we do our part. Can't just have somebody taking knees and throwing up fists and all that, and we just sit there and watch people get taken apart. Just say, oh man, I'm mad that happened. Well, shit, why you just sitting around watching it happen? We keep saying we not our ancestors, but hell, well, I know we not our ancestors because we ain't doing nothing real. You just keep saying we not our ancestors. That's not real. That's not live. You not live. So, Cap, I mean, one time for you, Cap, man. Everybody keeps saying they want you to speak. I think you just need to be talking to us as black people. You just need to be talking to us. We just need to be in communication so we can know what's going on. We need to be organized. It could be better organized and better communication. I will continue to say that. You just need to be in communication with us. You ain't got to tell white folk nothing. We just need to know what's going on so we can better help what's going on. The whole situation can be helped better if we had better communication. We know what's going on. But Colin Kaepernick is the GQ Citizen of the Year, and white people are tooting mad. And I'm glad that white people are tooting mad, and I don't give a fuck about white people being tooting mad, because, shit, you shouldn't be discriminating against us. You shouldn't be supporting the system of white supremacy against us. You shouldn't be on that bullshit against us, but you are. And it's being passed down from generation to generation to generation. And we got to take a stand. And when people take stands, they get mad. We don't care that y'all mad about your football games. Don't give a damn that you're mad about your football games. One time, Cap. One time for you, Cap. We got your back. As long as you're doing what's right, we got your back. That's it. And I will say this. Stop softening your stances and stop worrying about offending other people, too. They don't be worrying about killing us, so we ain't going to worry about offending them. All right, so next thing I want to talk about is, I guess I could say, the fallout of what happened with the LiAngelo Ball situation in China. So apparently, in order for LiAngelo Ball and his two compadres to get out of trouble in China, Donald Trump had to intervene and talk to the ruler, the president, whatever you want to call him over there in China, and get these boys out, get them boys out of trouble. And so LeVar Ball, I guess it's a back and forth, because LeVar Ball is saying that he didn't do it, Trump saying that he can't. So let me read this to you. President Donald Trump continued his feud with basketball dad LeVar Ball, suggesting Ball's son and two other Americans should have been left in Chinese jail until the next presidential trip. Trump said China's shoplifting punishment of 5 to 10 years in a jail is as it should be. So Trump mad because he's not getting his shine. And LeVar Ball, I guess, apparently mad that Trump won't his shine. So I guess Trump fired back via Twitter, claiming that basketball dad LeVar Ball didn't have much to do with helping his son LiAngelo escape Chinese justice for shoplifting. So LeVar Ball told ESPN that Trump aided LiAngelo, Trump's help of LiAngelo and everything. Basically, LeVar keeps saying everybody making a big deal out of the thing. So LeVar is asking, so what was Trump over there for? Don't tell me nothing. Everybody wants to make it seem like he helped me out. Trump previously boasted on Twitter that the players were facing 10 years in prison before he spoke with China President Jinping. Today, he lashed back at the seemingly ungrateful LeVar Ball. Now that the three basketball players are out of China and saved from years in jail, LeVar Ball, the father of LiAngelo, is unaccepting of what I did for his son, and the shoplifting is no big deal. I should have left them in jail. So that's what Trump is saying. Shoplifting is a very big deal in China, as it should be, 5 to 10 years in jail. But not to father LeVar. Should have gotten his son out during my next trip to China instead. China told them they were released. Very ungrateful. So this is a tweet directly from Trump. So that's the feud that's going on. You know, like I said last week, first of all, them little mugs shouldn't have been over there stealing anyway. So they shouldn't have been stealing anyway. So they messed up. They shamed their families. They shamed their school, administrators, everything. But then Trump having to go over there, that just put more fuel on the fire, Trump having to say what he had to say. Now, y'all know Trump going to do that. But what this is two assholes meeting. So LeVar and Trump meeting, and neither one of them assholes going to back down. But I think in this one, LeVar, I think you need to kind of keep your mouth closed, LeVar, and kind of just be a father and make sure that your son don't get caught up in no crazy stuff like this no more. Instead of trying to get caught up in the back and forth with Donald Trump. We know Donald Trump a hoe, and we know you got hoe tendencies as far as running your mouth and just talking that bullshit. But we know Donald Trump a hoe. Donald Trump, that's why he's still on Twitter acting the way he acting and disgracing. Well, I wouldn't say he's disgracing the presidential position, but because George Washington them owned slaves. So how the hell are you going to be more disgraceful than owning damn slaves, right? So, but... like I say, Trump is a ho-ho, and LeVar got whole tendencies, right? So this went from bad to worse, because now you got Trump involved. And all this could have been avoided if those boys would have just not stolen. Now, I was watching ESPN clips of First Take, Undisputed the other day, and I cannot remember the man's name that was on First Take that was being interviewed by Skip and Shannon, but he's a UCLA alumni, and I was asking him about the situation. He was saying that he blames himself and some of the other alumni who were still close to the school because they should have been on the trip with the young men, making sure the young men did what they're supposed to do. I agree with that to a certain extent, not too much, about 10%. They could have had extra chaperoning, but they're grown men, though. They're grown, but... bottom line, they shouldn't have been stealing. That's bottom line. They asses shouldn't have been stealing. That's straight bottom line. Don't be stealing. Because they embarrassed everybody. But now, young short staff, a.k.a. Donald Trump, is involved. It's blown up and it's out of proportion. But the back and forth between Trump and LeVar needs to stop. LeVar, calm down on this. Your son put you in a bad position, and you are not helping out with your mouth. You talk too much, and you don't know when to shut up sometimes. I'm not saying be no punk. I'm not saying back down to Trump or nothing like that. Fuck Trump and all that stuff there. But still, man, in this one, you got to understand what's going on with your son. You got to understand what happened, the repercussions. Like, your son could still be in Chinese jail right now. Your son really could be in Chinese jail. And whether you want to admit it or not, somebody got your son out of Chinese jail. Alright? Somebody got your son, and it wasn't you. Somebody who wasn't you got your son out of Chinese jail. So you need to fall back on this one. You already know Trump gonna be a little hoe on this one. You know he gonna be a little hoe on this one. But fall back. Sometimes you gotta learn how to take an L. And this one, LeVar, I think you need to take an L, and you need to stop saying this is no big deal. This is a big deal. This is a huge deal for what your son did. I understand shoplifting has happened before and all these things, but it's not okay to steal people's stuff. And it's not okay to steal internationally in the manner that he did. The stage that he stole on makes it worse than what we would say it is. The manner in which all of this happened in the stage, that's what makes it worse. You need to calm down. You need to stop being that dad in this moment. Be with your son. Make sure your son is straight. But stop trying to be in, with the back and forth banter with somebody like Trump. Stop it. You tripping, LeVar. Remember, you was not the one who got your son out of Chinese jail. It wasn't you. So that's the fallout. So so the boys are suspended indefinitely. We don't know if it's going to be a full season. We don't know if it's going to be half a season. We don't know how many games. But as of right now, the boys are suspended indefinitely. Now, I was watching SportsCenter the other day, and they are thinking about suspending the guys for the full season. Some people say that the full season suspension won't be, it's not good and it shouldn't be the punishment, but you got to understand the magnitude of what they did. Now, I don't want the boys to have to lose their whole season. But if they do lose their whole season, I'm not going to be mad. As a man, I learned accountability. As a man, I learned that when I mess up, I got to be accountable for my actions, and I got to take whatever punishment that comes to me. That's what part of being a man is. If you're going to be man enough to steal, you got to be man enough to take your season. And if they do suspend for the season, be a man. Work on your game in the offseason. Either come back next year or jump into the league. Do what you got to do. But the fact of the matter is you got to understand the decision that you made was a dumb decision and it got you where you are. So don't come getting mad at the punishment. Punishment may not fit the bill, but you got to understand the situation that you put yourself, your school, and everybody else in. I don't want you to be suspended for the whole season. But if you are suspended for the whole season, I ain't gonna be mad. You know. Because we gotta do better. We got to do better. Because one thing you gotta understand too is when you do things like that, because you're black and because we don't have the control of the media like we should, when you do something like that on the international stage, it's not just you doing that, it's all black people doing that. Now, of course, as an 18-year-old, you might not understand that. But your father understands that. And that's why I got beef with the way your father is handling this. And I think he's being a real bitch about this situation, the way he's handling it. And he could be handling the situation a lot better. Instead of saying, it ain't that big a deal, it ain't that big a deal. Even if that's how you feel, don't say that. Don't say that. Yeah, it is that big a deal, especially when you ain't the one getting your son out of Chinese jail. And especially when your son is in Chinese jail facing 3 to 6 to 5 to 10 years. Come on, man. Gotta do better. So speaking of the Ball family, speaking of the Ball family, keeping this show rolling, keeping this thing rolling, keeping going. Speaking of the Ball family, Lonzo, I'm not panicking about Lonzo because it's still early. But I am looking at Lonzo, and I'm keeping a close eye on Lonzo because I don't see the confidence in Lonzo Ball's game. Right now, Lonzo Ball isn't playing with confidence. He isn't playing aggressive ball. Watch the game against him and Ben Simmons the other day. You know, he had against Philly. What he had 2 points. Yeah, 2 points against Philly. He went 1 for 9 against Philly while Ben Simmons over there lighting it up. Joel Embiid dropped 42. Lonzo Ball dropped 2. He had 2 turnovers, 1 steal, 2 assists, and 5 rebounds. Now, I will say that Lonzo Ball's personality is injected into that team. So we can tell he has leadership qualities. The transition, the way they play is different from last year. But he is clearly not the best player on that team to be the second pick in the draft. And for what they're looking for him to do, he's not bringing that to the table. And that is being, that's what is looking scary. That's what is being questioned right now with Lonzo. I don't think you can bench him right now. It's too early in the season to bench him. But I do think Luke Walton has his plan and has his schemes, because in important parts of the game, when they need to make a run or late in the game, Lonzo's not on the floor. He's not. They have Kuzma, they have Ingram, and they have other people on the floor. We know that Kuzma and Ingram are better than Ball. They're playing better than Ball. Would they be better long-term than Ball? I can't say. I'm not the person who goes out to say that somebody won't be good long-term. Lonzo is definitely struggling right now, and it's between the ears right now. It's a confidence, it's a mentality, it's a psychological thing. Maybe it's all the things that's going on with his family, his mother. His mother had a stroke. She's recovering from the stroke. All the pressure that's being put on him by the yin-yang, his father, has put out there, being the second pick in the draft, expecting to be the next Magic Johnson, then his brother getting in trouble. Not making excuses, but those are real life factors that an 18, 19-year-old man this time is having to handle, as well as being the face of the franchise, who is the Los Angeles Lakers. Right? So that's a lot. Can you do it? Can you do it? Can you handle that pressure? So I will say that. Could I handle that pressure at 18, 19? I have no idea. I have no idea. But I do know you got to have the right people in your corner, in your life, to be able to handle that pressure. And as of right now, Lonzo, he's averaging, 8 points a game? Yeah, I think he's averaging 8 points a game, 8 assists. And, 8 points, 6 assists, and 6 rebounds. That's what he's averaging. So his best game was October 20th against the Phoenix Suns. Well, his best scoring game, where he dropped 29 against the Phoenix Suns. His best game overall, I would say, his game on 11-11 against the Milwaukee Bucks, where he had 19 points, 13 assists, 12 rebounds for his first triple-double on the season, or his first triple-double on the season and in his career. So his last, these are the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. These are the last 9 games that he played, right? So against Portland on November 2nd, he didn't score any points. November 3rd against the Brooklyn Nets at 6 points. November 5th against the Memphis Grizzlies, he had 9 points. November 8th against the Boston Celtics, he had 9 points. November 9th against the Washington Wizards, he had 10 points. Like I said, 11-11 against Milwaukee, he had 19. Against November 13th against the Phoenix Suns, he had 7 points. And I said he had 2 points against the Philadelphia 76ers on November 15th. And November 17th, he had 6 points against the Phoenix Suns. So he faced the Suns 3 times. And he had 29 points once. Then he had 7 points one time and 6 points one time. Now, facing Ben Simmons was going at him. Ben Simmons was going at him. Lonzo is very passive right now. I don't know what's going on with Lonzo. I don't think you should bench him right now. I do think you need to give him a chance to work it out. He does need to be more aggressive. He does need to stop walking that ball up court. He needs to bring that ball up court and get things set up and get things moving. Take shots. Take the shots, Lonzo. Take the shots. I don't care if you miss them. Take the shots. You need to take your shots. I know you're a better basketball player than what you're showing. I do know that. But you need to take your shots. You need to do what you need to do to show people that why you were the second pick in the draft. I'm actually rooting for you, but truth be told, right now, you're not playing good ball. Yes, as a rookie, you're a rookie. You're a rookie. And these are your first few games. But right now, for the second pick in the draft and in the face of the franchise, you're not looking good. You're not looking like a good second pick of the draft, and most people are starting to call you a bust. I'm not going to call you a bust. I'm going to let this season happen. I want to see you this time next year, see where you at. But as of right now, Lonzo, we got a lot to work on. And LeVar is a great salesman, because LeVar was selling you. But we did see you play. You played better in college. Like at UCLA, you was playing good. He was playing real good at UCLA. It was pretty dominant at UCLA. Now, that the last game you saw him against Kentucky, and Fox took it to his ass. That was the last game that we saw him in college, and, you know, everybody was like, well, that's just one game. He started off slow in the summer league, then he tore up the summer league. He was summer league MVP. The Lakers won the summer league championship. Now, this isn't the summer league. This is the real league. This is the big boys, and they coming at you. I can't wait to that Warriors-Lakers game. Ooh, I can't wait to that game. Because Steph Curry coming at you. You best believe Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond coming at you. You best believe, Lonzo, Draymond coming for you. They coming for you. So you got to bring it, man. You got to bring it. I am rooting for you. I hope that you can get out of whatever funk you're in and be able to get to a better caliber of basketball. But right now, it's not looking up to par. But I do hope that to see you get better. But right now, Lonzo, right now, it ain't looking good. It's not looking good. So, all right, so those are the stories that I want to get to. Those are the stories I want to get to you. So now you already know what time it is. You already know what time it is. Time for my weekly rant. Time for my weekly rant where I go. Holes. For all the whole holes out there. You was a whole hole out there. Alright? So, first part of my weekly rant is going to whole Peter Vesey. Because Peter Vesey don't understand the dynamics of what the hell be going on in life. So, let me give you the backdrop to bring you on up to it. So, LeBron, I don't know all the details, but LeBron got beef with New York people. He was on New York subway doing something. I didn't really get into that New York subway story with him. But Enes Kanter and LeBron got into a little... LeBron said something about somebody would be better on the Knicks team, think somebody to punk off of Dallas Mavericks or something. So he rubbed a lot of Knicks the wrong way with his comments and all these things. Here. And him and Courtney Lee got into a little shoving match with LeBron. Courtney was trying to shove LeBron off, but he couldn't really shove LeBron off. LeBron basically like, hey man, you was a punk, you can't shove me off. And his cancer run down the court and get into LeBron's face, right? And so they got a little separation, and they caused some technicals and all that. And his cancer coming down thinking he hard or whatever. And so let me read this to you. When the scuffle broke out on Monday's Knicks and Cavaliers game that involved LeBron James, it wasn't a surprise that Peter Vesey weighed in. After all, the veteran sports writer has been a fixture for decades in both New York and the NBA media. However, many were taken aback by the manner in which Vesey chose to comment. After noticing that New York's Enes Kanter was unlikely to be intimidated by James, considering his criticism of Turkish president Recep Tayyip Erdogan, whoever Turkish president is. So, this is what Peter Vesey said. Like, Kanter is going to be intimidated by LeBron, guy who stood up to Tayyip Erdogan. Imagine him being scared of a nigga who breathes the same air as him. But he put in that, then star. So basically, in his cancer, quoting the biggest, smallest line, niggas be just like us, picturing him being scared of a nigga who breathes the same air as me. So that's what Peter Vesey said that. But Peter Vesey, an old cracker. See what I'm saying? Peter Vesey, an old cracker. Let me say it one more time. Peter Vesey, an old cracker. So he just said this on Twitter. So he like, everybody like, hold on, Petey. But I'm not like, Pete, you know what the fuck you was doing, cracker. You bitch-ass cracker. You know what the fuck you was doing. You know what the fuck you was saying. I'm not going to be the one who you can play that dumb shit on like you ain't know what you was doing. You pussy cracker. You know what you was doing. Call him another nigga. I dare you, Peter Vesey. Call him another nigga. You know goddamn well you don't use that shit in that manner. Use an old cracker. You've been around for a long time. You done seen this civil rights stuff happening. you old pussy crackers. You know you just seen this shit happen. And you want to come and tweet some shit, come out, who imagine Ennis Cantor. Man, first of all, Ennis Cantor ain't shit. First of all, you ain't shit. Don't nobody, most people didn't even know who Ennis Cantor is. If you're not seriously into basketball, you don't really know who the hell Ennis Cantor is. Right? And Ennis Cantor run up in LeBron's face. Man, Ennis Cantor get doomed, right? But then here you come. Here your pussy ass come. Hey, imagine him being scared of a N ... who would breathe the same air as him. Fuck you, Peter Fess. Use a pussy cracker for tweeting that. And you know what you're doing. Stop. They be trying to act like it. They be trying to act like they don't know what they have going on, man. Like, come on, man. Come on, man. So everybody hitting him with the retweets and coming back at him. But it's like, come on, man. Vessi knew exactly what he was doing. Right? And it got, we to the point, we back where white people have never stopped having a problem with calling us nigga to our face. But we starting to see who is who. Right? That ain't no just no hip hop thing. I mean, Peter Vessi, I don't care what your past is. I'm pulling your cracker card, Peter Vessi. I'm pulling your cracker card. I'm seeing between the lines. You felt good calling him a nigga. I know you did. I know you did. You ashy cracker. You pussy cracker. I know you did. So you can't pull that stuff on me. You can't pull that on me because I know what's going on. I've been learning this stuff. I'd have been learning this stuff, and I know what you got going on, Peter Fessy. You felt good calling him a nigga. I know you did. You hit that. You read that, and then you hit send. I know you. Come on, man. If Biggie Smalls was alive, he'd slap your ass. Look, we're gonna start to slap the taste out y'all white folk mind. Y'all gonna learn to stop calling us niggas. Y'all gonna learn to stop calling us niggas. You ain't down. Black people call each other niggas because of social conditioning. Y'all white people try to call us niggas because y'all think it's cool. And y'all don't see the problem and want to call us niggas because it's cool. That show how much white supremacy is ingrained into y'all shit. And y'all don't even know it. You pussy cracker Peter Vessi. I hope you get reprimanded for that. I hope you get fired for that. Yeah, I said it. I'm usually don't call people jobs, but in this one, you know, I feel like you know what you was doing in this. And I feel like you took the shot because you felt like you could, and you felt like you get away with it. And I feel like that's why you took the shot, Peter Vest. But you was a pussy cracker for that. And you can't pull that on me. I see what's going on, Peter. I truly see what's going on, Peter. And you ain't putting that on Joseph. He ain't putting that on old Joseph. Not on me, because I see it, Peter. I see it with the pussy shit. Use a ho-ho, Peter Vessi. Use a ho-ho for that one. Straight up ho-ho, Peter Vessi. Straight up. That's how it go down, man. And so the second part of my rant goes to Michael Rapaport. Because Michael Rapaport is on the tirade against LeBron. Because Michael Rapaport mad that LeBron didn't give his child an autograph. Fuck your child, Michael Rapaport. First of all, see, y'all white folk done got too comfortable. See, Michael Rapaport, you'd have been you a couple movies, and listened to you some hip-hop albums, and named your son after one of the members in De La Soul, and people bring you on your shows, and y'all white folk get comfortable, and y'all think that y'all can just talk to folk any kind of way, like it ain't gonna be no consequences or repercussions, but it's a brother like me that's out here. Now, I ain't no LeBron fan. Now, I ain't no LeBron dick rider, nothing like that. But when I see crackers like you that's getting sideways and talking out the side of your neck to one of my peoples, I got to check your ass. And Michael Rapaport, I'm checking your ass. So you need to sit the fuck down. Fuck you, your platforms, your shows, whoever, and your little son and little funky ass autograph that he wanted from LeBron. I'm glad he didn't give your pussy ass son no autograph, because you was a bitch, Michael Rapaport. You was a bitch. Now you're going to calm down all that shit that you got going on here. You're going to take all that bass and all that wind out your chest, because don't nobody give a goddamn about you being mad that LeBron did not sign no little funky ass autograph for your little funky ass son. Fuck your son. Right? Nobody give a shit about nothing about you. LeBron was on the subway doing all that. Who cares? Y'all New York people, let me not say that. Cause it ain't all New York people, because it's directly, this rant is directly, strictly at Michael Rappaport and Peter Vesey. Fuck both of y'all crackers. Y'all done got too confident. That's the problem. Y'all done got too comfortable. Y'all think y'all can talk to us in the kind of way that you want to, because you think you intertwined and wrapped up in the culture. Because the culture didn't do you some good. You'd have benefited off the culture. You'd have profited off the culture and stuff like that. And now you think you can just come out and swear your chest up and say what you want to say. But not on my watch, pussy crap. Not on my watch. You think you're just going to come all out your chest like that. And I ain't going to say nothing. I heard you. I see what's going on. I know about it. Look here, Michael Rappaport. You ain't shit. You was a C-grade actor at best. The best things you got going on now is just your little rants that you have going on. You're like an old-ass curmudgeon who keep got your rants going on. And that's the best thing that you got going on right now. You got talent. You got talent. I'll give you that. You got talent. But what you're going to do is back up off the brothers. Don't back off all LeBron. And you're not going to talk to black folk like that. See, you one of them white folk who won't understand it, who you like black culture more than you like black people. You respect the culture more than you respect the people. You too, Vessi. See, this is what happens when you be too friendly with your culture. Especially when you're too friendly with your culture with people who already tried to destroy you and your culture. When you're too friendly with people who try to destroy you and your culture, you get people who, let's say, you know what, the culture ain't that bad. I don't really like them niggas, but I like that culture. That's what you get. That's why we here where we at right now. That's why these two crackers are the subject of my weekly rant for this bullshit that they got coming out their mouth toward our brethren, LeBron James, right? Peter Vesey, I stick my foot in your ass. Michael Rappaport, I slap the shit out of you. And that's all I got to say about that. Cause y'all crackers ain't getting no more of my time in this weekly rant. Once again, Peter Vesey, I stick my foot in your ass, and Michael Rappaport, I slap the shit out of you. Straight up. Hey man, thank y'all once again for tuning in to The Fix, the realest and the backest sports podcast you have ever heard. I am your host, Joseph Ward, coming straight from the South. And as you know, man, I try to keep it funky. I try to keep it real. Hey, make sure you get a copy of my book, On the Souls of Giants, Volume 1, North America, as well as Volume 2, Central America, on my website, www.ontheshouldersones.com, where it really goes down. Please support a brother. If you like the Kindle version, you go to Amazon, you can get off the Kindle as well. I got T-shirts, I got hoodies, all these things that we coming out. On the Souls of Giants merchandise is coming at you real soon, man, so make sure y'all get with that. It's The Fix, man, the Freedom Train Network. Remember, visit the Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com to learn more about the Fix Sports Podcast, to learn more about the title show, the Freedom Train Podcast Series, as well as the new shows we have coming out. Our brand new show, Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones and Erica Tober. And we have new shows coming up, Tea Time, Black Women Talk, as well as Lessons from the Stage. So stay tuned for those that we got coming up, man, at the Freedom Train Network. Follow me on Twitter at Joe Ward. You can follow the Fix on Twitter at Joe Ward. Follow the Freedom Train on Twitter at Freedom Train Net. Follow the Freedom Train on Instagram at Freedom Train Network. Like the Freedom Train Network Facebook page. Subscribe to the Freedom Train Network YouTube channel. Subscribe to The Fix on iTunes and Google Play. And subscribe to the Freedom Train podcast series on iTunes and Google Play. And you can now subscribe to Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones and Erica Tober on iTunes and Google Play. That way you get episodes coming right to your phones. Hey man, and that's how we get down. I'm Joseph Ward. I'm The Fix. And we keep it real how we keep it real. Hey.
I call the president. National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from the Air Force. There's no one.